right political answer to that. We're not a peace organization, so we don't focus on that. The essential question is what would be the rights, what would be the level of equality and dignity for the people who will live in that future agreed upon solution. And there is one absolutely incompatible future with the realization of those rights, which is what we're living in, a one-state reality that includes within it a perpetual occupation.
We're going to end it here, and then we're going to continue with part two of the discussion and post it online under WebExes at democracynow.org. Chagai Elad is the executive director of the human rights group B'Tselem. It testified for only the second time before the UN Security Council. I'll be speaking in Gainesville, Florida tonight, Melbourne, Florida tomorrow. Check democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman.
The League of Women Voters and the American Association of University Women Dearborn will present a screening of Michigan Divided, a film that follows six Michigan families during a period of divisive politics. It is part of the Michigan Truth Tour, which stops in Dearborn on Saturday, October 20th at Christ Episcopal Church. The public is welcome to attend this free community event scheduled from 10 to 11:30 a.m.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views and opinions expressed on the new WHFR Journal are those of the hosts, producers, and guests, not necessarily those of WHFR, its licensee, Henry Ford College, or its Board of Trustees. Enjoy.
Welcome to this edition of the WHFR Journal. I'm Susan McGraw, along with Alan Mazurek, and we are going to be all over the place when it comes to giving you information about things happening right here on this very campus, as well as in your community. Relevant, timely, topical, and even more. I can't think of so many adjectives to describe what we're going to talk about today. In general terms, we want to make life better for anyone who comes through this campus at Henry Ford College and anyone who comes through this community in Dearborn and Metro Detroit. So I think all of our interview guests are going to do just that. Alan, happy Friday. How are you?
Hey there. Yeah, happy Friday to you as well. It's nice to have you back. I did mention in last week's show when we had our friends from the Mirror News that we were expecting you, but it didn't work out. We're glad to see you back on your feet and back in our studios.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Very kind of you. Sometimes something just throws you for a loop and you're just you got down
right.
A couple of days.
That's how it works.
But yeah, thank you. Back up and running almost at full speed, so that's a good thing. We're going to be talking a little later today with the executive director of the Crime Stoppers organization. Fascinating, fascinating interview, and we'll see if we can get to all of it today, and if not, we'll maybe do a little this week, a little next week, or something along those lines. And beyond that, we're going to talk art, and we're going to talk about Chasing the Light. That's the title of a new exhibit that's coming to the Sisson Gallery, and we'll get more details from the artist himself. Donald Cronkite will be joining us. But first and foremost, two of our very favorite ladies here on the campus of Henry Ford College talking about some very important things, and we are getting into, it is that season for the Non-Traditional Careers Seminar in Technology. It's called Imagine the Possibilities. We want you to do just that. Now, this event is taking place this coming Wednesday, October the 24th, 7:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here in our own tech building on the campus, Dearborn Evergreen Road campus here in Dearborn of Henry Ford College. But, you know, the title alone is I think, very inviting and very interesting. But for someone that has not ever heard of this series of seminars before, of opportunities, we'd like to sort of start at the beginning. So we have brought in the experts. Diane Green is with us. She is a licensed professional counselor here at Henry Ford College. And Brenda Hildreth, who is the coordinator at the SOS, and that stands for
Student outreach
and support. And I think keyword support today.
Yes.
Because if we have people that are interested in doing something that they've not done before, they need support. And that's
Absolutely.
What this seminar is going to do. Ladies, welcome. Great to have you back again.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Good to be back.
Thank you. Tell us a little bit about this, why we host these seminars, and what the ultimate outcome should be for someone that gets involved. This seminar series has a long history, goes back to about 2007. And the idea, because it is a Perkins activity, a Carl D. Perkins activity, the seminars have focused on those careers that are non-traditional gender-wise for groups of individuals. So the fall one has traditionally been those careers in technology that are non-traditional for women. Understanding it's open to everyone, mm-hmm. but the focus is on careers that are gender-wise, careers that women need to be sensitive to and aware of. And then, of course, in the spring, we do one for our men related to health careers. So our focus this fall will be on the technology areas.
Mm-hmm. As we move into here 21st century and we're going bigger and bigger and more people are doing more things, we, you know, you might think that we have more female students working in technology already and more female students interested in studying technology, but they're, you know, if that was completely the case, we wouldn't need these seminars. So that really is not so much the case, particularly in our part of our little corner of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's correct. That is correct. Now, while certain ones of the technology areas have made some gains, they still have not reached the percentage or the desired percentage in terms of the representation of the number of women that have been identified. And those numbers have been identified and determined at the federal level. So this is kind of a trickle down in relation to the Carl D. Perkins Act. So we want to see certain levels of representation of women in these areas of technology. And we're focusing on the ones where they are still the lowest.
Mm-hmm. Makes perfect sense. And Brenda is here as a coordinator and a head of the student outreach and support component of our campus. Ultimately, too, are you trying to flag some students that you think might do well in this area? Is that a part of your objective here with the seminar?
It is. When students come to see me, usually it's because they have a need. Very often it's financial. So if there's anything that we can do to kind of guide them in directions that will eliminate that problem in the future for them, we do it. And this is an excellent opportunity for them to find out about careers that can do just that. Careers that they would ordinarily not think about. I don't know too many women who would think about going into a career that would be in heating and cooling, but there's really good jobs, well-paying jobs that are in that field. So we want to bring those jobs to their attention so that they know they have more options than what they may think.
So not necessarily just putting a Band-Aid on an existing problem that they're facing financially, perhaps, and getting through school or whatever, but looking long-term at things that they're going to be able to fall into a career opportunity to actually make a choice and say, this is what I'm going to do. It's different. Sorry, Dad. It's not what, you know,
what you are expected.
Yeah. Whoopsie. But I'm making some money here, and I'm doing something I enjoy.
Right. And we do try to address the short term, but also the long term.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. You really can't avoid either way, can you?
Right.
For a completely successful and well-rounded person, ultimately. So.
Exactly.
Wow, that's great.
It's interesting that this fall for this session, there's a lot of energy bubbling around renewable energy. And the faculty were, oh yes, we want the women to come. We want the women to come. We're really pushing this renewable energy. And that's one of the areas where they're seeing women going in greater numbers. While we still have women who want to do heating and cooling, the HVAC piece, they're really promoting this renewable energy piece.
So the event comes up on Wednesday, October 24th. Take us through the day. What can people expect when they show up, and what kind of, you know, opportunities, talks, or breakout sessions are going to be available for them?
Well, we have a complete agenda starting with a free continental breakfast.
That's always a good
start. That's registration. Yeah. We start bright and early at 7:30. We're usually there, what, Brenda, at about 7?
Yes.
Falling all over each other trying to get
sampling
things
the continental breakfast to make right, sure to it's make up sure. to par.
Getting ready. So then we have a welcome. Brenda then talks about her area and sharing with the students the financial support that they can get through her area, which is also Perkins dollars that are made available. Then we move through the presentations by faculty for energy tech, electrical tech, criminal justice, machine tool tech, hospitality. We also have architecture, computer information systems, and then we bring in Chad. You want to talk a little bit about what Chad does? He does an interesting presentation.
He always is interesting, and he holds the attention of our audience. But he's there to let the students know that once they do complete their degrees here, that there is help in finding jobs, mm-hmm. which is why they're here. And he's encouraging them not to wait until your last semester, but you really need to connect with him much earlier than that.
And you're referring to Chad Austin, our
Career Services Director.
Very good.
Then, of course, we have lunch and door prizes. So folks like to eat and folks like to win prizes. Mm-hmm. So we kind of sandwich everything in between those two ends.
Wonderful.
And in addition to having them come in and speak, they get to actually walk our students or potential students to the different rooms and the labs so that they can see the machines that are used and have a better feel of what we have to offer the students.
Nice. So this isn't one of those seminar type things where we get the students all hyped up and say, you should do this, and then kind of push them out the door, then they're done, and that's it. There is additional support as well as opportunities to, like you said, to see the facilities that they would be working in, that they would be learning in, and what's going to happen after they complete the process and complete the program. And I'm sure if someone's saying, I'd like to do this, tell me how, they're going to be somebody available to talk to them
Absolutely.
About that, too.
Absolutely. Because we're always available as follow-up.
Good.
Our information is made available to them to reach back to us. Faculty usually pass out their cards. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see students light up as they go into certain ones of the labs, because we're convinced that for many of the programs, the labs sell the programs.
They
walk in there and say, oh, wow, this is what I want to do. So we make sure that follow-up resource basis there for them as well.
Yeah. You must have some great stories from experiences that students have had. Maybe they come back and talk to you and say, I'm so glad I did this, or I never would have considered it except had I not, done this kind of thing. So
it's interesting. I actually received an email from a woman late last night, and she says, I want to register for this. My sister has been coming now for several years, and I want to come. So I thought, well, sister must have shared something really good for her to say, I want to be there. So I'm looking forward to us meeting her tomorrow.
Very good. Yes. Tell us how to register, and exactly what would you need from a student that wants to confirm that they want you to hold a spot for them. What should they do?
We encourage them to contact our office by calling 313-845-9629. And Ms. Anderson will probably answer the phone. If they can tell her how many will be with their in their party, then that allows us to make sure that we have enough food for those who are able to come.
Okay. And that's 313-845-9629 was the number. Correct, just to repeat it.
Yep. Thank you very much.
And if they find that they have forgotten to call, we encourage them to come anyway.
We take walk-ins.
Right, we do.
All right. And exactly where should students or potential students come to find the seminar? I mentioned in the technology building, but where should they go when they get in?
That's Building E, and we'll be in the Ghaffari Conference Room, which is room 1, 2, 3 on the main floor.
And we'll have signs posted
nice bright arrows directing them to where we'll be located.
Because depending on where you go in that building, it can be a little bit confusing. There's a lot of really exciting surprises tucked around those corners. So wonderful. Well, ladies, you have again done exactly what needs to be done to excite and empower non-traditional learners into some fields that have, one, a need, and two, a really exciting area of interest that somebody can make a career out of. And that's why it's called Non-Traditional Careers in Technology. Imagine the possibilities. So just wonderful. In terms of looking forward to future events and things, I know we try to do these a couple times a year kind of a thing. Any teasers for the one that's going to be later?
Well, the teaser for the one in the spring, what we call the winter semester, is probably going to be in April. And there we will be highlighting our health careers programs. The focus then will be on men, open to everyone, but focusing and highlighting those areas for men. Okay. So, and that's usually always big fun. Yeah. Having the fellows come in.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Well, Diane and Brenda, you're providing an opportunity here for a student, a current student or a potential student of Henry Ford College, to learn something that could, in fact, not only empower them, but literally change their lives. So we're very grateful for the time and effort that you put into these events. But one more time, let's go over the details. So this event takes place Wednesday, October 24th, 7:30 a.m. until 2 p.m. You get some continental breakfast. You get some lunch. You get a possibility of some door prizes. Mm-hmm. And in between there, lots of great information. And for more details or to register your attendance, simply call this number, 313-845-9629.
Great.
Easy enough?
Right.
Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Much success. Come back and tell us how wonderful it was, okay?
We will.
Good. We thank you. We've got more on the way. This is the WHFR Journal. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Dearborn Public Library is offering a Food for Fines program, which will run November the 1st through the 17th. Library patrons may donate non-perishable, non-expired food items and receive a $1 reduction in overdue library fines for every item donated. Dearborn firefighters will distribute all donations to needy local families through the Burn Drive Food Cupboard. For more information, call 313-943-2330.
Welcome. In this segment of the WHFR Journal, we're going to talk with President and CEO of Crime Stoppers. Dan DiBardino is joining us by phone line. And you've heard of the organization Crime Stoppers, I'm sure. We hear it on the news. We see billboards and so on. But what do we really know about this organization? And how, in fact, can we use this resource, this tool, to help make, keep our communities safer? That's why we've invited Dan on our show to talk. So looking forward to getting information from him, Susan McGraw, along with Alan Mazurek in our show today. And let's jump right in. First of all, Dan, welcome to the WHFR Journal. It is a pleasure having you here. Looking forward to some information.
Well, thank you, Susan. It's a pleasure to be on, and we appreciate the opportunity to provide your listeners with some information regarding Crime Stoppers of Michigan.
Great, thank you. A little bit of background, if you would please, not only how you connected with Crime Stoppers, but how Crime Stoppers in Michigan came to be in general, for those that are listening to us with really no clue. They've heard the term, but they have no real working knowledge of what this means, what it's all about.
Well, very good. Very quickly, I've been on the board of Crime Stoppers for approximately 10 years, and within the last 2 years, or through the last 2 years, I've become president and CEO of the organization. Regarding how it was initiated or founded, back in 1993, the Crime Stoppers of Michigan organization developed or was born out of a larger organization in Metro Detroit called the Alliance for a Greater and Safer Detroit. As crime continued to sort of increase, if you will, during that time frame, the founders of the Alliance thought it would be a good idea to create something unique and independent to help the citizens report crime.
as it relates to focusing into different communities, I know when I'm listening to my hard local news, when I'm not listening to WHFR, of course, which is sometimes I want to catch certain other things going on. We certainly hear about the stories of people looking for the alleged criminal and so on, and we hear that, you know, call Crime Stoppers with your tip. But this really is, as you said, it might have been born out of Alliance for Greater and Safer Detroit, but you are, in fact, Crime Stoppers of Michigan. So this can go into and does go into other communities, for example, Dearborn Heights, where we're broadcasting.
Absolutely, it does. As a matter of fact, I'm happy to report to you that we celebrated publicly our 25th anniversary right at the Henry Ford Museum, with about 450 people for dinner at our annual fundraiser event right there in Dearborn.
Wonderful. That's very good to hear. 25 years is nothing to laugh at. When we talk about the process of getting the community knowledgeable about what Crime Stoppers can do to help them, or what they can do to help Crime Stoppers, maybe even more important, how is the link all connected? How is the community citizen that is maybe afraid to say something but has some information about some type of a crime, how does that funnel through the process of what Crime Stoppers does, and then ultimately get to the authorities that need this information? Walk us through the process, and feel free to use an example if you wish.
Sure, I'd be glad to. First of all, Susan, we'd like to say that we are an alternative to science. These particular days, people sometimes are afraid to step forward, providing their name and address and certain information, although police agencies obviously love to have witnesses with their names, people that can go into a court and put their hand on a Bible and swear that they saw certain things and provide certain facts. But however, we recognize that there are many other people that would like to provide information on either a crime that may occur or a crime that's already occurred, but they just simply, for fear of their safety, for fear of their safety of their home, their property, their grandchildren, their children, and so forth, they needed a way in which to communicate through an alternative. And so we're an alternative where we're between the citizens and we're between approximately 220 law enforcement agencies to be able to funnel that information. So basically what people do is they can communicate with us in one of two ways, either through email, through our website, which is anonymous because we do not have the IP address, so we don't know where the email comes from. The majority of people, however, pick up a phone, dial 1-800-SPEAK-UP. The call is answered in Dallas, Texas. The caller is asked to provide some information using a very formed questionnaire to do that. At the end of that information, the caller is given a 5-digit number, and that's how they're identified as tipster 12345. They're advised that their tip may, if it causes an arrest, they may be eligible for a reward. And if they'd like to follow their tip in terms of how effective it was, they're given our Southfield number and told to call us on a weekly, monthly basis to see how, indeed, their tip's coming along. In the meantime, the tip information is passed on to our organization in Southfield. We have a number of people that pass those tips along to the appropriate federal, state, or local law enforcement agency. They work the tip. They come back and tell us whether that tip has been effective to an arrest. We then can provide the tipster with that information as he or she calls, and then, if necessary and if warranted, a tip, an award rather, can be provided to the tipster.
It sounds like there is some advocacy going on in terms of the cause of what Crime Stoppers stands for, and that really is of empowerment to get communities that probably have better sets of eyes and ears even than their own police forces in these communities to be able to actively participate in, again, making their communities safer. This process of community outreach must be a challenge, and it must be somewhat daunting to get people to be proactive in terms of sharing what they know. The reward part of it certainly is something, or the potential for a reward. But ultimately, what is your experience? What do you find, Dan, motivates people the most to actually take that, you know, that brave step and reach out to Crime Stoppers and call for the purpose of trying to help be a part of the process of solving a crime?
Susan, we find for the most part that most people are motivated by doing, believe it or not, just doing the right thing. Now, our rewards, which are motivating in some cases, for example, we have rewards right now that literally are $100,000, and that occurs, Crime Stoppers, for example, because we are funded through our corporate friends and only through our corporate friends. We pay a maximum for the most heinous crime, being homicide, $2,500. But there are what we call joint rewards, where friends, relatives, loved ones, etc., of the victim, whether they be a victim of a carjacking or whether they be a victim of murder or whether they be a victim such as the dog that we heard so much about several years ago, that somebody cut his ears off and his nose off and so forth. People contribute to these rewards, building up those funds. I make that point to say that oftentimes when those types of rewards, those large amounts are offered, people tend to pick them up. But for the most part, some of the smaller rewards, $2,500, $2,000, etc., people don't pick them up at all. They just don't bother. So we know that people want to do the right thing for the most part, and probably 50% of our rewards are not. They're issued, but they're not picked up.
As it relates to the sort of the goal or the motivation of reducing crime in Southeast Michigan for Crime Stoppers in general, as well as increasing citizen involvement and ultimately making the area a better place to live and to work and to play, in the process of reducing crime, any statistics, any value added in terms of we had this many calls, which led to this many arrests, which ultimately brought crime down because the bad guys know that the good guys are out there watching and are willing to speak up. Got any numbers like that, Dan?
As a matter of fact, the number that I can share with you that we monitor all the time is about 20 to 22% of the tips that we take in either lead directly to an arrest or that they help the law enforcement community go into a direction helping them identify a person of interest. Now, interestingly enough with that, particularly in your listening area, Dearborn Heights, the city of Detroit, and so forth, we average approximately 50% of the tips that we get are from those outlining or meaning communities right around the city of Detroit, right in Detroit itself. So, for example, in the last 5 years, we've taken in over 28,000 anonymous tips. 50% of those tips are from the city of Detroit and the surrounding area. And we believe, based on working with law enforcement, talking to law enforcement, talking to the Department of Justice, because we deal with agencies from federal all the way down to the Department of Natural Resources, we believe we're a small piece of the puzzle, but we know that anything we can do to help solve crime, which reduces the opportunity for more crime to happen, is a foundation for a great economic impact to the community.
And hi, it's Alan here, by the way. And sort of what is that relationship between an organization like Crime Stoppers and law enforcement? When those calls come in, when those tips come in, how does that information get forwarded on to authorities that are actually in the position of being able to investigate them or, you know, truly identify someone as a person of interest or make an arrest?
Well, let me, a good question, Alan, and let me, if I may, digress just for a minute. People often ask us, how do people ask for or seek or get help from Crime Stoppers? So there's one of two ways that occurs. And the first one is directly to the question you just asked. A law enforcement agency, be it the FBI, be it the drug enforcement people, be it the Detroit Police Department, Chief Haddock Department in Dearborn, whatever the case happens to be, they'll call us and say, we have run every lead we know for this particular case, and thus far, we're at a dead end. Can you help us by utilizing the tools that you have? Press conferences, press releases, door hangers, posters, information that we pass out to the community and so forth. Our initiatives with Channel 2, Channel 4, Channel 7, WWJ, all of these tools, can you help us reach out to the public to seek additional information? When that information comes in via 1-800-SPEAK-UP or the email, and it's forwarded from Dallas, Texas to our office, we then have several people in our law enforcement relations office that move those tips, in writing, of course, to the appropriate law enforcement agency. The law enforcement agency, then, is responsible for the investigation of said tip. People often ask us the question, are you an investigative firm? We are not. We are simply a machine, if you will, that can reach out to the public by a number of tools and so forth to seek that information and simply get it to the right law enforcement agency.
You explained that so clearly and so eloquently that I think that it really did, you know, get to the point of the question, what the relationship is. And obviously, as an organization, you have, you know, connections and contacts with police departments all around the area. You talked about corporate funders, things like that. And I guess that's the flip side of the coin here is someone's got to pay for those billboards. Someone's got to pay for those, you know, online ads whatever. How does that side of the equation work for Crime Stoppers?
Well, we are funded totally by our corporate friends, people like Lear, Forcia, a number of other organizations. Ford, for example, hosted our dinner at the museum there in Dearborn. We have a number of banks, Comerica Bank, for example, all kinds of community organizations. Quicken Loan is another one. So all of these companies and for-profit institutions that have any connections with the business community in Southeast Michigan, primarily, of course, right around the city of Detroit now, they provide us funds during the course of the year. And that funding could be as little as $1,000. It could be as much as $50,000, whatever they can provide us. And their concern is twofold. They do it quietly. They do it because they're concerned about their own employees being safe. And they're also, I think, being good citizens to Southeast Michigan and the area that we live in.
Yeah. One thing that I think is fascinating, when we were talking about the numbers a little bit ago, you were sharing some of the statistical data, the idea of the awards that are being given out, or the rewards, if you will. I was reading on your website that the reward does not expire if somebody provides a tip which leads to an arrest and they decide to leave town for a while or whatever the case, that reward would still be available. And just, I think the numbers, the sheer amount of money that is being paid out in rewards is, of course, completely connected directly to the number of tips that are successful. So the more money that gets paid out in terms of reward, or at least is set aside for someone that has participated in sharing some information, the better it means, really, that Crime Stoppers is working. Unfortunately, maybe it means the more crime there is, but ultimately, it means that this process is working. And that's got to be a good feeling.
It is. As a matter of fact, along with that 28,000 anonymous tips that we took in the last 5 years, and I must say and emphasize to your listeners, out of those 28,000 anonymous tips that we received, not one tipster was ever identified, because we don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. They have a number. We don't know. We don't do any phone tracing. We don't have the police involved. We don't do any caller ID. We do none of that. So none of those 28,000 people ever were identified as tipsters. Along with those 28,000 tips, we issued and rewarded over $450,000.
And that seems obviously a concern in this day and age, when we assume that everything we do is being tracked by somebody somewhere, that this is truly anonymous, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, one of the interesting questions, because we have a speakers bureau, so we're constantly out in the communities, in the block clubs, particularly downtown, and in some of the neighborhoods around Detroit, Dearborn Heights being another, social groups, Rotary clubs, etc. The question always comes up about anonymity. You know, how anonymous is it? And I'm very happy to tell people that you know, we have never had a tipster identified. We have no way of identifying a tipster. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you what I think is kind of a funny story. Every now and again, I'll receive, either by personal service or mail, a subpoena from some law firm asking us to identify a tipster on some information, and I simply send it back with a note saying, I don't know who the tipster is. Good luck.
There's no way of finding out. Right. Yeah.
No way at all. We have no way to do it. And the other question that comes up when we talk to people about anonymity is, they say, if you don't know the tipster, how can you possibly pay a tip? So very simply what happens is, as the tipster calls into our Southfield local office and asks how their tip is going, we're waiting for information to come back from the law enforcement agency that either says the tip was redundant, it didn't help, the tip was not clear enough, it didn't help, or the tip helped us to cause an arrest to occur. If that third piece of information is provided to us, we tell the tipster, your tip generated an arrest. Your information, meaning the tip you provided, along with a written report from the law enforcement agency, are put together and they're brought before what we call the reward court, which is an independent group of people who look at the tip, who look at the information from the law enforcement community, and they alone decide whether a tip will be paid. I, as president and CEO, don't issue any tip money whatsoever. They do that on their own, telephonically, every month. Once the tipster's told that the reward is available to them, they're simply asked if they can get to one of the three banks that we have initiatives with: Huntington, Comerica Bank, are two of them, for example. And we simply ask them, if they don't tell us where you live, don't say anything other than, do you know a branch for one of these particular banks? The tipster says, yes, I do. Which one would you like to go to? I want to go to the one on Michigan Avenue, the Comerica Bank on Michigan Avenue. The caller is simply told, next week, you go into that branch, you ask to speak to the bank manager. You tell the bank manager you're a tipster 12345. He or she will then provide you with an envelope with cash money, and you walk out the front door. And nobody asks who you are. Nobody talks about provide ID. Nobody talks about anything. The way the bank knows that is our people call the bank in advance and tell them the tipster 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 will be in sometime next week.
It sounds like a pretty robust firewall as far as the people who are actually the tipsters. But as you mentioned, and I'm sure some people have that, you know, initial hesitation, but most people want to do, as you said, want to do the right thing because they're doing the right thing for their community. They're doing the right thing for, you know, their family. They're doing the right thing for where they live, and they're doing the right thing because it's the right thing, I guess.
That is exactly right. It is because it's the right thing. And I'll tell you, I think all of us, and I have a pretty small staff at Crime Stoppers. We have 17 of us, and three-quarters of them are part-time people. I don't think we could do our job listening every day to these victims and their families in terms of things that have occurred, whether it's missing persons or rape, or a murder, or a financial scam that's taken $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 from a senior citizen. I don't think we could do that if we thought that people just called us because of money. And I think that's what compels us to keep going, is we're working with anonymous people in our communities. They may be our friends. I'm sure they're our neighbors in the Detroit area that just want to do the right thing, and that's what makes it all worthwhile.
Well, let me ask one more question. I think when we think of crime, you know, we naturally sort of leap to what could be considered the ultimate crime, which would be murder. But what are the majority of, if there is, you know, a majority or plurality of, you know, cases or types of crimes that go unsolved that eventually work their way to you at Crime Stoppers?
Well, obviously, Alan, the worst one, the most heinous of them all, of course, is homicide, and that's where families reach out to us through the officer in charge of a case to seek some information, or at least to seek some justice. But we're across the board. We go from everything from vandalism, literally. We just I can't get into specifics because we're very cautious about what we say in terms of dealing with tips that have caused arrest. But I can tell you that within the last month or so, there was some serious vandalism done to a couple of institutions by some young adults, and the tip came in and had those particular young adults were arrested for vandalism. So we've gone from vandalism all the way to homicide, dealing with kidnapping, dealing with missing persons. I reported to a dinner crowd of about 450 people that while we have had great success with a number of cases, we still have many cases that are still open. A number of people, young people that are missing, presumed dead. One girl from the Detroit area who broke down on the side of the road and was seen talking to some individual, and the next thing you know, she's gone and nobody knows where she is. Talked to a mother recently in the Macomb County area that thought her 18-year-old son just got a wild hair one day and left home, only to be found. He was found in Fort Graves, killed. So it's a myriad. We even had a press conference about a year ago with the dog from the Michigan Humane Society that some person, I use that term loosely, cut the dog's ears off and the nose off and lamed the thing so it couldn't work. So it really is across the board with the kind of crimes that we deal with.
It is just horrific, horrific things out there. But we are grateful to all of the organizers, the volunteers, the community activists that keep Crime Stoppers moving forward. And as you said, Dan, a small staff, but always an opportunity to get bigger, and always an opportunity for our listeners, should they have a particular passion or an interest. Oftentimes, I know that it's sometimes when something terrible happens to your, you know,
know, little small acre of the world, you tend to have this resounding passion now to try to give back and do something beyond. So should we have people in our community that are interested in participating beyond just knowing and advocating for people to call that 1-800-SPEAK-UP? Should they have information about something? Ways to contribute, ways to volunteer, to donate. Should we send them to the website?
Please do. As a matter of fact, thank you very much, Susan, for the invitation. I would ask all your listeners if they'd like to volunteer. We have a number of volunteer things that we do, everything from Christmas parties to for children who have lost their loved ones to homicide, all the way through speakers' bureaus and all kinds of other things. We have a prisoner outreach program. We have all kinds of outreach programs that we need volunteers for. If they want to go to our website, there's a whole section there that talks about volunteer opportunities. And we would also ask all your listeners, whether it's a dollar or whatever they can spare, if they can go to our website and use the donate button. The only way we can keep going and advocate for victims of crime is to be able to be financially sound to do that. And any help your listeners can provide us would be wonderful.
Well, we certainly appreciate that, and I know there are also opportunities, too many to mention now, but information on that website about ways to support this organization through shopping, things you're going to be doing anyway, through using grocery store reward cards and so on. It's amazing, really, what social media can do to bring together people that want to help, maybe don't have the financial resources, but want to. And all of that information, again, right on the website, which is 1-800, and then the word speak up, 1-800-SPEAK-UP.org. That is the direct number. Some great frequently asked questions in there. So I appreciate the information that you've got on the site, Dan. Final note, final thought, and we're very appreciative of your time today. When it comes down to people thinking, oh, you know, this isn't our community, or we would never have to have a need to call this kind of a number or something. It's everywhere. I don't want to end on a negative, but perhaps a realistic tone of how we are in need of these eyes and these ears and this brave, brave approach by our citizens in any and every community. This is not just the Detroit community.
Absolutely true. And you know, it's really not ending on a negative. The fact of the matter is, and I tell people all the time, and so does my colleagues that work with me, crime in a city, and I grew up in the city of Philadelphia, so I can speak to that directly. Crime in the city may not look the same as crime on Main Street in Rochester or Oxford or wherever, but it's still crime. It still affects people economically. It affects people psychologically. It affects people. And if we're not looking out for each other, then the opportunity for crime just rises. And we all become victims. So we need to help our law enforcement people who are trying to do the best to help us, and we can do so by protecting each other.
All right. Well, couldn't have said it better. The number again, should you have a need to report a crime anonymously, 1-800-SPEAK-UP. And if you would like to go to the website for any information regarding Crime Stoppers of Michigan, again, that website address is 1-800-1-800 and then the word speakup.org. Dan DiBardino, President and CEO of Crime Stoppers, we are grateful for not only your time today, but your efforts in helping to make our corner of the world a safer place, and really grateful for your time.
Susan and Alan, thank you so very much. We really appreciate the opportunity to continue to get the word out about Crime Stoppers. Thank you, and have a pleasant evening.
Thanks so much. We've got more on the way. Please stay with us. This is the WHFR Journal right here on 89.3 on your FM radio dial.
On Saturday, October 27th, WHFR proudly presents our yearly record show featuring thousands of records, CDs, videos, and other music memorabilia being sold by independent, local, and out-of-state vendors. Join us in the Student Center from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. here on the campus of Henry Ford College. For more information, please visit whfr.fm/recordshow. Once again, Saturday, October 27th, is WHFR's next record show. See you there.
It's the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw. So glad to have you with us on this Friday afternoon. Of course, lots of things going on. We've already covered some great topics in our program this week. And I guess when we meet again, probably in a couple of weeks, we are going to have kind of a pre-election edition of the WHFR Journal, talking about things that are, you know, we're going to be dealing with on the ballot. And we'll see what we line up and get ready to go for that first Friday in November.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there is so much to talk about as far as it relates to that. But maybe you're thinking, oh, election talk, all of this midterm, that I need a break. I need a respite. I need some art and culture in my life. Well, have we got the thing for you? We are excited to be talking about a beautiful, beautiful exhibition that is taking place throughout this month of October and into most of November, right here at our beautiful Sisson Gallery in the Mackenzie Fine Arts Center here on our Henry Ford College main campus. Now, this is called Chasing the Light, and we are fortunate enough to have the artist himself, Donald Cronkite, in studio with us to talk about this this approach to art and what it means to him, as well as Steve Glazer, our faculty member and gallery director here in studio. So most excited that our timing is such that it is, gentlemen, because the reception is taking place in just a few hours.
Yes,
so,
it is.
So if you're really interested in what you're seeing, you don't have to wait until like Monday to go see it or anything like that. You can literally turn over in just a few hours and come on down, because today between 4:30 and 7, the opening reception for this beautiful exhibit, Chasing the Light, is taking place. So Donald and Steve, welcome to WHFR. Pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having
us. Thanks,
Susan. Thank you. Donald, in your words, tell us about Chasing the Light. What will we experience when we come to this?
Well, Chasing the Light is a glimpse of a 14-year experiment building upon the transitory and fleeting quality of storm cloud formations. Utilizing paint as a vehicle for documentation, each painting is a visual record of a ever-changing natural environment impacted by the drama of light. Each of the works in this exhibition attempt to capture a moment in time while evoking an emotional response and challenging the imagination of the viewer. I hope when people leave this exhibition that they have a sense of a memorable experience, and to think of the ephemeral in nature a little bit longer. These things only last for a moment, and then they're gone forever.
But they're not, because you're chronicling them and you're archiving them, and you're allowing us to stand and look for an hour if we want to at one particular piece, which is just tremendous. So in the reality, in the real world, what you're documenting, and I love the way you call it documenting, in fact, in your art, is an opportunity to have people kind of pause life just a little bit, pause that beautiful formation that they really would, as you said, only have a fleeting moment to look at, and just really kind of explore how it makes them feel. And explore what it's saying to them. Those are lay people's terms of kind of trying to say the same thing of what you just shared.
It really is. I'm taking a common subject and having people look at it a little bit differently. Everyone can relate to storms, and I'm picking that moment just a few moments before the rain comes down. At that moment, you got undulating forms, you got saturation of light, extreme contrast. That's where the beauty and the romance lie. That's what I want people to see.
I would assume most of us know that. We've seen that when those storms are rolling in. We know what those moments look like. And, you know, in our minds, probably the easiest way to capture it is through a photograph, right? Because that's like you can at least get it down to like a thousandth of a second if you do it right. So what's the process of creating these as paintings? Are they done from imagination, or are you see these things happen and frame that in your mind, or take a picture and try and recreate that in a much more intense process, I would assume, by creating a painting out of it?
All of the above. It's okay. A very interesting thing. It's imagination, great deal of memory, a little bit of maybe photographic memory, but I also carry a camera with me, not just a cell phone, but an actual camera. And when I'm driving, these moments change so quickly. So I might have to roll down my window, shoot a bunch of pictures. I will anticipate a storm coming and let's say get on top of, let's say, one of the hospital parking structures, like Oakwood, for instance, mm-hmm. and I'll wait for it. And I'll snap a bunch of shots. I love the trees in Michigan, but for this subject, they get in the way. So I got to be inventive.
Well, that makes perfect sense. As I'm looking at one of your pieces, the one that's been on the poster that's been all around campus and in the community, and it's just stunning. I not only am sort of taken in by the fact that this isn't a photograph, that this is a painting, because that's how perfect it looks.
Correct.
In its own, you know, way of imperfection. But you talk about it being a 14-year experiment in this process. Are we going to see pieces that took place after the experiment ended, 14 years, you know, in the making? Or are we going to see pieces going throughout that time frame of your own creative process?
Actually, it's still ongoing. I'm still creating them. There's one on my easel right now. Oh. But I did throw a few in there. Most of them are done within the last 3 years. Okay. But there is quite a few that go right there to the beginning. That way, when people come in there, they can see the broad range of experiments that I have gone under.
Fascinating. Steve, you got this whole thing together, so why was this important to you? Why did you feel
okay.
we needed it?
Donald sent in, I guess, unsolicited DVD with information, and it got pushed aside for a while, I'll admit. And then
nothing personal, of course.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, as you're busy and stuff. And this summer I was going through stuff and this came about on my desk and I looked at it and looked again and looked again and it was, wait, there's something here. And yeah, so it's just a lot of art you look at on an image on a computer, and it's nothing like going to a museum or gallery and seeing it in real life. But it's like when you've seen or experienced it a lot, you sort of gauge, learn how to look at something. Mm-hmm. And from that, I looked at it and almost immediately got on the phone and called Donald and said, hey, can we work this out to have an exhibition? And it was, even became more important because we are in the 80th year of Henry Ford College right now. In a way, the gallery is trying to focus on things that deal with the 80th anniversary. We had a faculty exhibition, and Donald is an alumni of Henry Ford College. And therefore, that ties in, and that just made everything come together even more. And the exhibition, it's like, as much as one could see of photographs on a DVD, they don't compare to the paintings. And a couple of comments that I've had from a couple of people who have seen it so far, because it actually has been open to the public for the 3 days, 4 days, is it reminds me of what astronauts talk about when you're in a spaceship and there's no up or down.
That was going to be my question, is that like how large these are, because you can't compete with the sky. It's like standing on the lip of the Grand Canyon. You can't help but look at it. Yeah.
Some of them are quite large. They range in scale from small, like the size of the poster, to...
Well, we have one that's 14 feet long.
Wow.
If that satisfies. And we have some that go down to a small study of 9 by 14 inches. But I think you'll find a lot of them are like 4 feet by 6 feet. And they're meant to fill the peripheral vision. I want you not to just see the picture, but while you stand in front of it, you feel the picture. It engages you, and you have to reckon with it.
Well, very well put. We can talk about it only so much. You have to just come
out
and you have to experience.
That's where we're at a disadvantage on radio.
That's right.
For once, I guess.
Yeah,
right?
you've got it. But it's called Chasing the Light, and this will be on display here at the Sisson Gallery, which is in Building F, the Fine Arts Building, right here on the campus of Henry Ford College on Evergreen Road in Dearborn, where the building sort of in the very back of the campus, connected to the Adrey Auditorium. And the gallery is open Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, 9 to 4:30, Tuesdays, 9 to 8, and even Saturday, a Saturday in November, which is rare but wonderful, November 10th from 11 to 3. And I know also, Steve, you are available when it's possible to open the gallery up for appointments.
Give me a call. My office phone number is 313-845-6485. Set up a time, and if I can be around, I will open the gallery on a one-to-one basis for you.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. Again, this is available only until November 21st, and that sounds like a long time away, but on November 15th, you're going to say, oh my gosh, there's only a week left. I need to get in there. So best would be to just come to the reception this evening right at the gallery, starting at 4:30, going until 7 o'clock, and that's an opportunity to meet the artist, to meet Donald, and that's a rare privilege that we like to present to our viewers here in the Metro Detroit area. Through the Sisson Gallery. So wonderful. Well, just much success. Beautiful. I've been lucky enough to see the exhibit. As I said, my office is about like 200 feet away. So it's a pleasure. I get to walk by it every day. But we are so anxious to hear what our community shares in terms of their response. It's always exciting watching other people respond to art. And I bet you get a kick out of that too.
I do. It's great to hear back from people because as much as I look at it in the studio, it has a resonance with people out there.
Oh, and it will. Well, we've got so much more to talk about, but wanted to make sure that we were able to get a chance to promote this, to share this. We'll continue to do so. Much success and best of luck, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks, Susan.
Thank you so much. We've got more on the way. This is the WHFR Journal. Stay with us.
On Saturday, October 27th, WHFR proudly presents our yearly record show featuring thousands of records, CDs, videos, and other music memorabilia being sold by independent, local, and out-of-state vendors. Join us in the Student Center from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. here on the campus of Henry Ford College. For more information, please visit whfr.fm/recordshow. Once again, Saturday, October 27th, is WHFR's next record show. See you there.
You can go trick-or-treating with WHFR this year to claim your trick-or-treat grab bag filled with CDs, candy, and other treats.
Or tricks.
Call 313-845-9676 during any live show on Halloween Day and say trick-or-treat to the DJ and you will win a free trick-or-treat grab bag. You can also email us whfr@hfcc.edu with trick-or-treat in the subject line. So this year, get a free trick-or-treat grab bag from the friendly ghouls here at WHFR.
Thanks for being with us this week on the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek, Susan McGraw. Always a pleasure and an adventure to look at all of the great things going on in our community and on our campus, not to mention the investiture, which took place yesterday evening, of our new president, Russell Cavahuna, which I assume was fun, right?
So it was exciting. Told. Just a wonderful day. We've got lots to celebrate here in our 80th year at Henry Ford College.
Indeed.
Stay with us. Have a wonderful and safe weekend. And we will talk to you soon.
Kitty Love is up next. We're going to take a trip down Highway 61 here on the station that is always making waves, WHFR, WHFR.fm. Stay tuned.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Time. That's